I'm sorry, I probably lost a minute right there. I shot in the title to make the title slide not so congested as originally had in my abstract, but I'm glad that my previous speaker introduced the concept of integrating ecosystem experiments, the data, with the predictive modeling, and that created the ground for me to move on without much introduction. So I'm part of the next generation ecosystem experiment in Arctic. Many of you might be familiar with it as NG Arctic, as we like to call. And the focus here is really to understand the microbial processes in the Arctic ecosystems in response to changing climatic conditions. And most of us are aware of the large carbon stocks in the Arctic ecosystem that account for nearly two-thirds of the global terrestrial carbon. And the IPCC statement shows clearly that there's a huge uncertainty in how much of carbon might be lost as carbon dioxide, as methane. You can see they have a huge range that says anywhere between 50 to 250 gigatons of carbon, which just establishes the fact there's a huge amount of uncertainty in how the carbon feedback processes are going to respond in Arctic ecosystems. And particularly our understanding of the permafrost carbon, and more specifically of the methane cycle, is very limited at this time. So to enhance our understanding of not only the processes, but also to move forward in our predictability of ecosystem changes, the NG Arctic is based in Barrow Environmental Observatory, which is in Barrow, Alaska. The landscape here is underlain by continuous permafrost zone and interstitial polygons. Here's a view of what I mean by the polygonal structure. To the left here, you're looking at low-centered polygons, which are really saturated regions in the landscape that have a border we call the raised edges or rims. The other extreme are the high-centered polygons, where we are moving from a relatively wet to relatively better drained condition. So we're essentially moving along a landscape gradient of saturated to drier or better drained condition. And in these two major polygonal types make up much of the BEO in the Barrow Environmental Observatory. And hence we began to ask this question: if you choose these two extreme gradients, what are the processes we need to test for, and can we enhance our understanding? So for a better view of the polygons, when we go out into the field, the low-centered polygons are almost like a mini wetland, where you can see the centers are saturated, almost inundated throughout the year, and the raised boundaries or ridges are elevated in the landscape and relatively Arctic. In contrast, the high-centered polygon centers are well-drained enough to almost create these mounds or hummock-like features, and which are predominantly Arctic to the organic horizon. So with those kind of hydrological gradients that exist in the landscape, we wanted to test for the geochemistry before we could inform what microbiological questions would be relevant in these ecosystems. So we use ferrous ion concentration as a proxy for redox condition. And here we are moving from the low-centered polygon in the top to the high-centered polygon in the bottom along the hydrologic gradient I mentioned from saturated to dry. And on the x-axis here is the soil depth. So we're moving from the organic horizon to the deeper mineral and then the permafrost where we found the permafrost existing. So you can see that as we move from the organic horizon to the deeper mineral horizon, there's an increased concentration of ferrous ion, which serves as an indication that the system is predominantly anoxic. And hence we could hypothesize that anaerobic carbon degradation is going to be the dominant processes in this system. The exception, of course, is the organic horizon in the center of the high-centered polygon with those elevated mounds that I showed you in the previous slide, which are predominantly Arctic and confirmed by the relatively lower abundance of ferrous concentration. So hence we now have an understanding that we expect the carbon cycling processes to be dominated by anaerobic microbiology. So we started out with a very simple experimental setup. We wanted to answer the central question: what are the carbon loss potentials of these systems? So on the left here, you're looking at continuous temperature measurements in situ that Vladimir Romanovsky and his lab carries out for us. And looking at the active layer, which undergoes the cyclical thawing and freezing, you see that to a depth of 10 centimeters, the soil never really warms up beyond 8 to 10 degrees C, versus the deeper mineral layer, it hovers around that 0 to 1 degree C. So we're looking at a very wide gradient, so to speak, because these soils are frozen for the major part of the year. So we wanted to trap and capture the effects of this thaw season in the Arctic and see if we can have a better understanding of carbon loss in terms of both methane and carbon dioxide. So we carried out anoxic microcosm incubations under the three temperature conditions here, and we are testing for both the geochemical changes as well as the gas production potential, both for methane and CO2, and also looking at the microbial community structure shifts. So this here is a plot that shows the cumulative methane concentration changes over time, and I want to spend a minute here because the layout of the plots will be similar in the upcoming slides, and the color coding for the temperatures is generally the same throughout my talk. So the red symbols and red lines here represent the plus 8 degrees C, the plus 4 degrees C is represented by the blue lines and blue symbols, and the negative 2 are the black symbols and the black lines. And we're looking here at the low-centered polygon center and organic horizon. So when I say a low-centered polygon organic horizon, think more than 50% of carbon, more than 80% of gravimetric water content. So really high carbon and saturated system. So in terms of temperature response of methanogenesis, what is really unique is the temporal variation. I mean, the temperature sensitivity is obvious, higher the temperature, higher the rate. But what we could capture through these high resolution measurements of every other day or every other 5 days, that the dynamics of methanogenesis is not static. There's not a linear increase of methanogenesis as the temperature increases. And this is typical of a microbial growth curve where there are more than one phases of the growth, right? There are phases where the systems might be limited by biomass, limited by substrate availability, or terminal electron acceptor, which might be followed by a growth phase where there's exponential activity and increase in abundance of the biomass. And a third phase, which doesn't really reach an asymptote, but shows as evidence the system is getting limited by either the nutrient or the substrate or biomass, which we do not know. When we move from the center to the trough, we see the same dynamics temporarily, but we see that instead of the sigmoidal algorithm that we could fit in the previous slide, there's almost an exponential increase in methanogenesis. So really driving home the point that there's a lot of heterogeneity depending on where we are in the landscape. So the trough at the center, even though they are both saturated and high in organic carbon, but the sensitivity temperature and the dynamics of processes is very unique. And we were able to show in our paper that this is critical when we talk about temperature sensitivity and use Q10 values in a subsurface biogeochemical models. Traditionally, a Q10 of 2 is used to universally fit all processes, and most of you are aware that, in general, the microbial process representation is so limited in subsurface models. So we could establish through this study that a universal Q10 framework will not hold, and because the assumption for Q10 system is that all the mechanisms are going to react to the same degree to all temperatures. We show that the system is more dynamic than that and more complex, and hence should be accounted for unique to each landscape unit. So when we contrast the low-centered polygon with the high-centered polygon, and this is the data from the troughs which are saturated for both the polygonal types, we see that for the high-centered polygon, which are indicated by the solid symbols, there's a high initial rate, as you would think from the emission for the viable community originally, but then there's a decline in rate, which is kind of expected and shown in the literature. The contrast was really with the low-centered polygon, where we see this long lag phase, about 7 to 10 days, beyond which the system really starts to rise in its function and activity. So what's driving that increase in rate? Is it something the substrates are becoming more available, or is it just the biomass of the methanogens growing actively? So to ask that question, let us bring back to how does the methane cycle work in salt. It's a very simplistic overview, but I just want to remind you that methanogenesis is really the terminal process in anaerobic carbon degradation, and it depends on this whole consortia of syntrophic, hydrolytic, the fermenters, and the acetogens before the methanogens can get the carbon and hence produce methane. So we targeted acetate as the key substrate because much of the literature in permafrost microbiology shows, in the Arctic at least, that acetoclastic methanogenesis is the dominant process in these ecosystems. So being informed with that, we tested for pool changes in acetate concentrations. And here's a snapshot of the general overview we see in all the saturated conditions. where with increase in temperature, there's an increase in accumulation of acetate, but the concentrations are really significantly higher in the organic horizon than the mineral horizon. In the mineral horizon, even though there's a decline in concentration between the two temperatures and between the two times of the 0 day and 60 day, that is not really significantly different. So there is something driving the organic horizon that accounts for both the substrate availability and the high activity that we could see. So the organic horizons seem to be the significant source of acetate for acidoclastic methanogenesis. So we have now looked at temperature response of the activity, and we see a temperature response of acetate if acetate is the sole substrate for methanogenesis in these systems. So does the biomass in turn respond and is so dynamic to temperature? So to test for that, we were detecting the MCRA gene, which is the fingerprint gene for all methanogens, which is the methyl coenzyme reductase subunit A, and that gives us a quantifiable unit to be able to correlate mathematically to the production rates as well as the substrate pools. So here at the top, I'm showing you the organic horizon, and the bottom is the mineral horizon. We're looking at the three temperatures that I showed, and on the primary y-axis are the copy numbers for the MCRA, and the secondary y-axis are the maximum methane production potential. So this is no longer the cumulative rate I showed you earlier, but the maximum rate during the entire incubation period. And then the inset here is the same acetate plots I showed in the previous slide, just to help you imagine how the change in the pools happened over time. So we see in the organic horizon there is some increase in the copy numbers, but that's not significant, whereas the temperature response in rates was significant between the negative 2 plus 4 and plus 8. In the mineral, it was really remarkable to see that whereas the biomass in negative 2 never really came up, that the process was not even expressed, we not only did not detect the gene, but we could not even measure detectable amounts of methane with our methods. However, at plus 4 and plus 8, the copy numbers went up by more than 2 orders of magnitude, as did the rates. So to summarize, the organic horizon seems to be the significant methanogenic pool, both in terms of biomass, the substrate availability, and hence that gets reflected in the rate. So if you bring together all the landscape units that I began in the initial stage of my talk, in the left column, we're looking at all the organic horizons, so the centers and the troughs, and the right here is the mineral horizon. And if you focus on the secondary y-axis, you see the organic horizon generally has significantly higher rates of methane production, and the low-centered polygon centers the highest organic carbon content soil, so the most saturated condition, have universally the potential to become the major methane source compared to the high-centered polygon. So what does this mean in terms of the ecosystem and in terms of carbon loss stoichiometry changes? So here I have three different plots, three different ways of plotting the same data, I guess. The top panel is the cumulative carbon loss, both as CO2 and methane. Here is the microgram methane carbon loss per milligram carbon, and then the micromole methane loss per gram dry weight soil. I mean, no matter whatever way I plotted the data, the take-home message really here was, when we move along a gradient of the most saturated condition, which are the low-centered polygon center, to the most drained condition in the low-centered polygon ridge, the high-centered polygons are somewhere in the middle. So the wetter the condition in the landscape, the more sensitive it is to lose increasing amount of carbon, both as CO2 and methane. And this is consistent with previous synthesis reports, modeling predictions, as well as empirical results that have shown that the wetter systems are more sensitive to increase in temperature conditions than the drier. So the best predictor model when we choose environmental variables to be able to facilitate predictive modeling in subsurface models seems to be the water content, followed by the biomass, and hence and then the temperature sensitivity of the two processes. So I'll leave you with a question. You know, we are talking about the fate of Arctic ecosystem as the soil temperature keeps on increasing, and much uncertainty still exists in understanding. So are we going to have a future landscape in the Arctic where it's going to be dominated by a degradation process of the low-centered polygons into a high-centered polygon, probably a result of the positive carbon feedback due to increased amount of methane from the saturated systems? With that, I'll end, and I hope I have time for a question. Thank you.